Now it's time for Whispers, your number one source for all things paranormal, with your hosts, Jordan Klein and Nick Queen, and produced by the lovely Lola Miller. Whispers is brought to you by West Virginia Penitentiary Tours. At the West Virginia State Penitentiary in Moundsville, unforgettable, historical, educational.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Whispers Radio here on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It is 610, 57 degrees here in downtown Wheeling. Give us a call, 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area, call toll-free, 1-866-514-1600. Lola.
What a...
I love you.
Yeah.
You seem a little...
Preoccupied.
Ho-hum? Hmm.
Preoccupied.
Preoccupied, I can take.
Preoccupied.
As long as it's not hatred.
I would have believed. You're such an optimist. You act as though I'd care.
Oh, wicked.
Wow.
Jordan, I care.
Guess I'm spending the season crying.
This season?
I didn't.
The Halloween season.
Oh.
Whatever.
I thought you were going to go like winter. Well, there you go, Lola. The winter of his discontent.
Yes. You have given me a miserable winter. October 26th coming up. That's next week, ain't it, Nikki?
That's next Tuesday.
That is it. Yes.
Next Tuesday. Jeez, is there something going on?
Baseball is still going, right?
Nick!
Oh, wait.
Quit giving away buckets.
We got buckets. No. We really need to get past these buckets. There are other things other than buckets.
What's going on the 26th?
It's Jordan's birthday.
No, that's the 24th.
No, that's close.
It's close.
Well, I knew I was in the 20s.
Lola, when's yours?
Because I know you're 29.
Woo!
So Sunday the 24th is your birthday.
That's not what I'm talking about. What's happening on the 26th?
Oh, wait. Halloween stories?
Oh, my gosh! It is Whispers. Third.
Are you like on an overdose of caffeine or something today? First you came on sounding like a disc jockey from a bad 1960s radio station.
Listen, you weren't
sort of my fault. But.
Nick said, hey, when you get on, be really loud so I can get the levels. He's like, just started with like, hey! So I did.
So in other words, he hasn't came
fault.
Down
it is,
yet.
It is his fault.
Okay. I know now who to blame.
I take all the blame and I am so sorry.
That's because you do it so well.
Next week, I'm just going to be like, Jordan, can you just go on and become a dower? And just like, hey, guys.
Hey, Nick.
Yeah. Yes.
Anyway.
Yes, Jordan.
Our third annual haunted stories, not even a contest. It's a giveaway.
Celebration extravaganza.
Celebration. That was the Mothman, Lizard Man or whatever. They had an extravaganza.
We can take it.
You call in, give us your scary stories, your ghost stories, your UFO stories, your Bigfoot stories, any kind of stories you got. You give them, and then we give you stuff. It's a party. It's early Halloween.
So what kind of stuff we got right now?
Trick
or
treating.
We got buckets.
Let me tell you about the buckets.
Oh, no.
For $2.50, you can fill up a ginormous bucket. What do you say? It's like a gallon bucket?
It almost on your head. Yeah. That's huge. Oh, I'm sorry.
You get to go to Carmike Cinemas, and if you're here local, that's out in Ohio Valley Mall. $2.50 fills it up full of popcorn. You can keep using it. Wash it yourself. Yeah. Keep using it until the end of the year.
Yeah,
good stuff. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Go watch Red. I heard Lola talking about Red. That does sound good. I was wondering if it would be worth watching. Red. Got Paranormal Activity 2.
Paranormal. We're also, Carmike's giving us tickets to give away, too, for Paranormal Activity 2. Coming out that weekend.
Let Me In. Kid Vampires. Scary.
Yeah, you'll never watch
that. I would never watch that movie.
We have books. We have pizzas. We have... Just
all kinds
be
of stuff.
Fun time.
And we're still looking for stuff. If anybody has anything they want to give away,
we'll
get
give
in touch. I would say go to our website.
Oh, and we're going to have Foggy Bottom tickets as well.
Which for those trying to get to our website, no idea what happened. It looks like our bandwidth was exceeded. Never happened before, and I don't know why. So trying to get in touch with the person over that get that from, work that out hopefully soon. Hopefully soon.
It happens.
It happens, yeah. It's the web. It's the tubes. The tubes got clogged. Got to work on it. So.
You're such a
Don't
nerd.
Smile at me like that. So for your birthday, I mean, we were talking about what kind of plans you got?
Well, it's a little known fact that I enjoy hockey.
Just a little known fact.
Just a little bit.
So I'm going to a hockey game.
Do you have... We always make fun of Jordan because Jordan's got this sports thing. That, well, he doesn't, actually. So, any ideas still what happens in that game? It's like it's got ice. And now I was actually talking to somebody I work with. Their brother-in-law is a hockey. He actually played for the Nellers. He was one of the leading scorers a couple years back. She was showing me pictures of his battle scars. He's got high-sticked and got like a scar going up his nose. Hockey players are...
I love the Nailers.
Yeah. She was telling me...
Hockey players are real men.
They are real men.
They get any athlete that gets stitches after a contest is a real man.
Yep.
And the opposite of real man, quarterbacks. You can't even touch them anymore without... Oh, it's a penalty. You thought badly about them and...
Think it's bad now. You wait.
Well, I know they did that helmet to helmet now for suspension. That's hard. If you're coming at somebody full force.
Well, I think they're going to, what they'll do is try and change special teams.
What do you mean?
Because, well, the rules surrounding like kickoffs and that kind of thing, because that's where guys are going full tilt, 70 yards. And
got
I
a
think
real
most
good run
of
and
those
start.
Happened.
Yeah.
During special teams play, but
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, Chris Spielman, he was a real man. They'd interview him after a football game, and he'd have stitches on his face. I'm going, yes, that's a real man. Seriously. Anybody that's dental bills are higher than their medical bills.
After a hockey game, they go up for the interview, they just spit teeth out. And like,
this is
right.
Why you like Cowboys, you want the rodeo thing going.
That's right.
You climb on top
riders.
Of a bull.
That's right.
Yeah, they get stitches. So.
Yeah.
Don't look at me that way. So going into
is really going.
Yeah, we got to save this quick.
So, I didn't start this.
No.
So UFOs here recently. There've been all kinds of UFO sightings all over the country.
Well, tell us
these?
About them.
Oh, New York. They saw some up in the sky. I mean, I think that was during the day. And I was looking here now. More seen over El Paso and Richmond, Virginia.
Really?
There was another one too that they.
Now, what kind of UFO was it? Was it like a?
Let me pull up a video.
Like a. I was out milking the cattle and an airplane came down really low. Or was it like?
Wait. Here's one picture here. That's not the picture I was looking for. Pretty much. Let me get this picture up. I'm sorry. And I'm going to try to turn this around. You can kind of see
just
here.
Like start.
It's
like, look, it's star. I see. I don't know.
But
don't
the one is during the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So not too many stars during the day.
That's cool. The other day.
Except for the sun.
We went out to Foggy Bottom Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking up in the sky. And it was my brain says, oh, it's a shooting star. But it went for like... the entire span of the sky. I was like, wow, look at that. I wonder if it was something cool. But.
A crashing plane, probably. I told you that happened to my sister. You know, when we were driving home, she saw what she thought was a shooting star, and then all of a sudden it kind of shot straight across. So,
well,
I don't know. They're out there.
Yeah, no, and I know these, at least the El Paso ones, they're kind of saying that there might have been skydivers at night. Not exactly sure about that one.
I just landed in a cactus.
I got to read a little. I got to read a little more into that one. The other one they were saying was balloons, but they kind of held a pattern, and it's kind of hard to do
in
for
New
balloons.
York. They're
in
saying,
New York.
Yeah, I know. They were saying they were some kind of balloons, like go from a wedding. I have never seen balloons stay stationary.
And that's what I was saying. They usually go by. I mean, really fast.
Yeah,
I mean, they're gone. They got helium. Yeah. They're blowing away. You know. So it is a little weird. I'll try to. I was gonna say I'll post that, but I can't. So,
Nick, you want to introduce our guest?
I can do that. Give me 1 second, because normally I go to our website to get the. I started hitting the thing. I was like, oh, that's not gonna happen. So, Dan Gordon experienced the magic of Fenway in the summer of 1975 for the first time when he was taken to his first game by his father. He's the author of, we had him on before for Haunted Baseball. Uh-huh. His new book, and I love this title, Field of Screams. Dan, you with us?
Yeah, hi.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, guys. How's Scott?
Oh, doing pretty good. Yourself?
Good.
Now I meant to go look for this earlier, and I'm going to actually pull it up right now. I'd be honest with you, I have not been watching baseball here recently at all. Red Sox, are they in the playoffs?
No. They were cursed this year. They had an injury curse of some kind.
Okay, Yankees in there?
Yeah, they're playing Texas, although they're in trouble actually, which is nice to see.
See, now that one I knew about, and I had to kind of tease you because, of course, you know, Red Sox fan hates the Yankees and vice versa. So, but at least they are losing, so at least you're in a good mood about it. So, you know, pretty much if we don't get there, let's let them lose.
That's the way it works up here. Yeah.
Yeah. So now. This new book you have out, I know the first one, we talked about all kinds of different stories, you know, Haunted Baseball. I love the title of the new one, Field of Screams. In fact, this is probably going to be option for a movie just to use the title. It won't be anything about the book, but...
It made me happy just when Nick said, oh, his new book's called Field of Screams. I was like, yes!
Well, actually, there's a lawsuit battle in Maryland, and I was just reading this, Maryland and Washington over... Two haunted theme attractions, both named Field of Screams, and one's in Pennsylvania, actually. They're 2 hours apart, but the Pennsylvania one is huge in Lancaster. Yeah, so it's kind of funny that, I'm just like, I hope they don't pull us into that.
I was going to ask, you're not in this, are you? I mean...
No.
Staying on the outside.
Some lawsuits.
Oh, geez. So now, the first book, you know, you pulled together a bunch of... you know, baseball hauntings. I'm guessing you had some stuff left over, or is this a whole new rash of hauntings that came out after this book, the first book?
A little of both. I mean, we definitely had stuff left over. I mean, our publisher wanted us to do, our manuscript was 250 pages, and, you know, we were, the first one we turned in was like 350 pages. So,
wow.
Like, we knew, you know, that was like in painful cutting, and we didn't want to, like, cut the, you know, the weak stuff, which I don't think hopefully there isn't much, but we just kind of like said, well, we're going to save this, you know, certain hotels, certain stadiums for the next book. But, you know, we, of course, continued to talk to players, and now we've talked to over 1,000 players. And, you know, we got a lot more stories. And then, of course, you know, like there was some crazy stuff going on in the game, too, like a construction worker, a Red Sox fan bearing David Ortiz jersey in Yankee Stadium, the new stadium, as they were bailing it, and, you know, saying he put a 30-year curse on it, and then, like, the team jackhammering it out. So, I mean, there's a lot of new stuff to write about, new stories, and we talked to some, you know, stars that had stories from, you know, we learned a lot of new things even about the story books in chapters we were writing about.
So, no, wait, we have to go back to this. A Red Sox fan, they're building Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
And he decides to take David Ortiz's jersey. Where did he bury it at exactly?
I believe it was in the visiting clubhouse. And he did it openly. You know, he was, he didn't actually, he was begrudgingly working there. He actually had refused the assignment many times until he came up with the idea, like, okay, I'm going to go in there. You know, he's from the Bronx, and he's a Red Sox fan, and he really hates the Yankees. And he said, okay, I'm just going to go there. I'm going to curse the team. I'm going to bury this thing. He did that. And it wouldn't have come out at all except that, you know, like several workers, except like one guy in a bar or one of his coworkers was drunk and just like, oh, I can't believe what my coworker did. And this other worker just like freaked out so much he called the New York Post. And the next day it's like, you know, all over the country, headlines, and you know, the Post actually interviewed us for the article, which was really cool. But we actually went in, we talked to this, you know, guy Gino Castagnoli, about, you know, why he did it, which is really funny, you know. And then we actually found out that there were a lot of other construction workers that were burying things. We talked to another guy who buried a Red Sox commemorative coins that are still from the 2004 World Series that are still in there. And he says he put an 80.
Oh, geez.
Oh, we just lost him.
Just lost him. The ghost.
The ghost of the stadium.
they're after us here now. So, which might answer Steve wanted me to ask him a question about it. You know, once they tear down like a stadium, where do the ghosts go?
Right.
Here.
Here. Yeah. Here. They come track us.
How dare you talk bad about the Yankees? I'll cut you all off. So. There's a couple of things I would want to bury in some stadiums too.
Yeah.
Like Dallas Cowboys.
Okay, just pick that thought right back up where you left it.
Sorry about that.
There we go.
I was saying the ghosts are here. You know, they're like, don't you dare talk bad about the Yankees. You know.
yeah, they're trying to bury me, I guess.
We won't let them. We'll keep trying. So you were saying that you know you buried a coin, and I think we lost you right around there.
This fan buried coins from the 2004 World Series, like commemorative coins, and he put one in each of the four major footings of the ballpark. And then we learned that, you know, like other Mets fans hate the Yankees too. And they put stuff all over the place, like little miniature helmets that you put ice cream in and stuff like that, batting helmets. Even one fan, you know, kind of begrudgingly, you know, because he was friends with a Yankees fan, he was a Sox fan, I believe, he buried his friend's dad's ashes in section 208 of the ballpark. So I mean, all these things are still there. They dug out the Ortiz jersey. They actually spent like $50,000 jackhammering it out, you know, from 5 feet of cement.
Jeez.
You know, the Steinbrenners did that, you know, which is, you know, really amazing, you know, the ownership. Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of that was a pretty real fun chapter to write. We interviewed a Sox fan actually who lives in Vermont who planted Yankees grass seed from the kind of grass seed for the in Fenway Park. He threw a water balloon onto the field, and that made headlines too. So yeah, kind of like a lot of the battle for the soul and the karma of the teams and kind of thing. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, now, and I'm looking on your website here, and I have to ask you before, you know, because we're kind of talking about charms kind of being in there. What is this good luck thong? Because you see that, and I'm like, well, that might have been a miss, but no. What is this now?
Yeah, we're going to get R-rated here. Jason Giambi of the, when he was with the Oakland A's before he went to the New York Yankees, he...
Oh, we lost him again. It's these ghosts, I'm telling you.
And this looks like leads into the Yankees again. So what?
My goodness,
George Steinbrenner, gotta let it go. I understand this is painful to listen to, but so now would you hide? You're a Pittsburgh fan, right?
Yeah, okay, I like Pittsburgh. Yeah.
So I mean, would you if you could go to like Dallas Stadium or Cleveland or something, would you bury something there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would.
I think I would too.
Yeah.
Not that Cleveland.
Get off the Yankees
cursed.
For some reason.
We've got to move off the Yankees.
Yeah. No. I'm trying to.
We've got to get this thong story in there though, so quickly before they do it again.
Yeah, basically he wore a thong for whenever he was in a huge slump. A friend of his who works for a thong company gave it to him as a joke, as a leopard dotted leopard gold colored. And it worked. Every time he was like in a huge slump, he'd wear it, and then he started telling his Yankees teammates about it, and they all started wearing it. Derek Jeter told us that, you know, he only wore it over his boxer shorts. He never, but like Johnny Damon said, like, oh, you know, it makes me feel all loose when I'm up there and at the plate, and I'm thinking about this song. I'm not thinking about, you know, how badly I've been doing, and you know, then I get a hit. You know, so like it was a big thing, and like you know, Giambi showed us the thong. It was hanging in his locker. There are a lot of, you know, we have a whole section just on really funny charms and, you know, things that some players, you know, even though they joke about it, they're very serious about it, too.
What kind of other charms away from the Yankees? Let's try that. What other kind of charms do people have out there?
Yeah, one of them actually is was a stuffed parrot that the Red Sox actually have, and I'm sorry, I'm still in the Red Sox Yankees thing here. In the bullpen, and it got stolen in the 07 World Series, and you know, the team bullpen kind of freaked out, especially Hideki Okajima, and like Mike Timlin that was in the bullpen just got on like Boston television, sports television, and like said like, you know, we really need this joke back, and he says, I'm not joking, we really need it back, you know, and the, you know, a couple of college kids came back with it, apparently it was, they said they found it in their freezer there after a party, you know. I'm sure they that wasn't the actual story, but but yeah, there's a, you know, Dodgers players carrying around sod from you know, their home team because they played poorly on the road, they carry that around. There's a strip club that in Baltimore, that was Babe Ruth's dad. Used to own the bar, and he actually got shot. I mean, stabbed rather. He died outside of the bar. And there's a poem of Babe Ruth in the bar and in the strip club, and players all have to touch it. It's kind of a good luck thing they do when they're in Baltimore. So, like, yeah, there are various places where, you know, we have these, you know, crazy. You know, I mean, lots of teams have their charms.
Now, looking at the playoffs here, we have, you know, Philadelphia Phillies, San Francisco Giants, Texas Rangers, and an unnamed team that we won't go to anymore because we've been disconnected twice now trying to talk to them about it. So, I mean, Philadelphia, do they have any charms that, you know, right now Philadelphia and San Francisco's charm is working better. They're winning 3-0 right now. So do they have something that's, you know, spurring them on good luck-wise?
Their charms are their pitching, especially the Phillies. But, yeah, we didn't get every team, and those teams we didn't get. But from them, we got, like, hotel stories, especially, you know, the Giants and the Phillies. Roy Halladay, you know, was, like, one of the most, you know, humble and quiet guys in the game, but, you know, one of the best pitchers in the game. He was kind of embarrassedly told me a story about a hotel in Scranton that a lot of players have talked about. And it's a AAA Scranton team, visiting team hotel. And, yeah, like players have seen apparitions there and heads spinning. One is a famous story that a few players had, and we interviewed all of them. They all had the same story about a kid who turned his head 180 degrees backwards. But, you know, but Halladay just kind of had a story of, like, his lights, the lights in his room and the TV set and the faucets all going on. And he shut it off and, you know, woke up again and it was on again, had a putrid smell in his room, abandoned the room. But Tim Lincecum of the Giants and their ace pitcher also had kind of a really wild story about a hotel in Milwaukee that a lot of players talk about. He claimed that a ghost was kind of pressing against his door, leaning against his door, and he could actually see the door kind of bending in, you know, and he freaked out and slept with the lights on the rest of the series. They bolted shut the latch on that door. And so a lot of weird stories.
Wow. Now, do you ever, you know, you're researching the book, you see this hotel, hey, it's got a haunting. Do you go yourself? Maybe spend the night, see what's happening.
Yeah. Actually, Mickey's had been the luckier guy. He's been to both of those hotels, and you know, requested the haunted rooms and that kind of thing, and you know, never had anything firsthand happen. But he talks about it. The same thing that the players say is that you're walking in these hotels, you feel like you're stepping, those two hotels, you feel like you're stepping back a century. You know, it's just like really, you know, the bellman and the old style uniforms and all that stuff, and kind of the murals on the walls. And it freaks out the players, you know, especially some of the Latin American players, because they're not used to, you know, like the ornate old, you know, American hotels, especially.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just kind of a paranoia that players have going into these places. But, yeah, Mickey talked to a lot of the staff, too, in these places and kind of, you know, was trying to get the real lowdown that they had as well.
Now, do they give any same similar stories, that kind of thing? Or?
Yeah, the Scranton hotel workers were for the most part, very protective. But we've run into that with some of the hotels, and I'm sure you've had with some of your past guests, you know, where some hotels don't mind telling you, some actually promote it, and some, you know, kind of almost threaten their workers, you know, if you say something about it, you know, you're going to lose your job kind of thing. That's what we think was going on in Scranton, because they were all, dissing the players, saying, oh, it's a bunch of drunk players and this and that. But, I mean, we literally, for Scranton, talked to, perhaps over 100 players at least with either a first-hand story or a team story. I mean, all sorts of things, you know, simple things like a TV set being on and you unplug it and it's still on and can't shut it off, or, you know, coming on in the middle of the night, to, players claiming that apparitions were sitting on their bed or hovering over the bed or lying next to them, to hearing really bizarre sounds, like a train, like, almost running through the room in the middle of the night, and you know, lots of other things like that. And you know, similarly, well, the Fifth Hotel was more, you know, they've kind of had a lot more media attention already on their hotel, so they've lightened up, and they promote it and kind of say, oh, it's our owner coming around. And, you know, so it really depends, you know. You know, you see that a lot of places, like the Baseball Hall of Fame, for instance. They were pretty, a little bit nervous about when we actually kind of found ghosts, you know, story, you know, workers there that talked about some, you know, things that happened to them, of seeing apparitions and hearing noises and that kind of thing. And then the Sci-Fi Ghost Hunters came out with an episode now, too. So, I mean, they're just becoming more open about it and talking about it, too, because you can't argue against it if so many people are claiming it and it's getting out there, you know. So,
hey, if you can hold tight just for a second, we've got to get to our bottom of the hour break. If you're listening to Whispers Radio. We'll be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Whispers Radio here on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It is 644, 56 degrees here in downtown Wheeling. Give us a call at 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area, call us toll-free, 1-866-514-1600. We're talking baseball, and we're talking haunted baseball. Are you still there, Dan?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we didn't lose him again. So we're going to stay off of the Yankees. So, now, I do like these stats you got here. You've got 142 different players giving ghost or curse stories in the new book. 71 of these stories are firsthand. So 232 supernatural tales in all in the book. 211 of these never been before heard or talked about before in the media, right?
Yeah.
And then 9 different nations of stories.
Yeah. We had a whole international section that was really kind of cool to write, because I've been writing on international baseball for years. So, you know, actually went over to Japan and interviewed a ton of players over there, and got some different perspective on ghosts in baseball and you know, kind of their own superstitions as well.
And for some reason, Japanese ghost stories always freak me out.
Because you think of the Ring and
I think of the Ring and Grudge, and you've lost me right there. Can you tell us one of these stories? What's your favorite Japanese ghost story?
Favorite one? There are a lot of stories from baseball stadiums and from the team dormitories, like in Okinawa and Hiroshima. You know, where a lot of people lost their lives, obviously, during World War II. And, like, a lot of the Hiroshima stories are about the blast, the A-bomb blast, and, like, the fact that people were, you know, kind of, eviscerated in the people jumping into the river. And, like, one player in particular is famous for seeing, like the river being black, from people's ash, jumping in. And, but actually, like, another player was telling us about, like, you know, often you would be walking along right by the ballpark and along the benches there, and you'd see the shadow of somebody who had been sitting on a bench right by the river. The river is right where the ballpark was, right where the A-bomb, you know, was detonated, literally right across the street. One player, he claimed he was in his dormitory and he like woke up in the middle of the night to use the bathroom, and as he was coming back, he felt a tap on his shoulder, and he kind of, you know, he was already nervous, you know, it was kind of, the place kind of spooked him out, and he kind of ran into his futon and dove under the covers, and then he felt like somebody lifting the cover off of him, and he looked, and there was a woman there at a table, and he described it very vividly, this woman pouring a beer and kind of offering him a beer, too, and he said she was so beautiful that he kind of forgot for the moment that he was, you know, that what was going on, and he kind of just, like, was caught up in the moment and wasn't scared, and then all of a sudden he saw a flash of light, and then, like, everything eviscerated, you know, the table and her. And, you know, a lot of stories like that, eerie things. And, yeah, the Japanese, because they're such huge believers in ghosts, I think in order to entertain them, they have to go for the really scary, you know, because, like, you know, they believe that, you know, spirits are everywhere, and you see it all throughout baseball and through that, and some their rituals and their superstitions and
really, like,
things
what
they do to walk.
What kind of things do they do?
Like, you know, pouring salt in the dugout steps. You know, salt is a big thing in Japan for purifying, and you see it in sumo wrestling where people, you know, the sumo wrestlers toss it and everything, you know, before they step into the ring. And you see, like, people putting it on their doorsteps. And the purpose of it is for, you know, to purify and to keep the bad spirits away. And, like, you see it on teams will do it during a slump. And, you know, I actually had a chance. I was interviewing a manager in Hiroshima, actually, and one of the grounds crew was pouring, you know, a big mound of it in the front steps. And the players will touch it and things like that. But they also have amulets. They have things that they put behind pictures and, you know, purposefully to ward off the ghosts. But they also kind of try to, you know, pray to their ancestors. And they have a holiday where they go to the graveyard and you know, gravestone of their ancestors and, you know, capture their spirit in a lantern and bring it home, you know, and have a week-long feast. It's called the Obon Holidays. And, you know, my wife's actually Japanese, so, I mean, I know, but and I spent a lot of time in Japan, too, so I kind of know, seen a lot of this stuff firsthand. It's,
wow.
You know, so,
I do like the typical male kind of thing where you come in and there's a beautiful ghost there and you just get so wrapped up in the fact, hey, there's a beautiful woman in my room. Look, she's pouring me alcohol. And you forget that that's a ghost.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Now the head back over, I guess, to the U.S., Lola, our producer, the lovely Lola Miller, she's a huge Detroit fan. And, and I noticed here that you have a first media mention ever that the former Tiger Stadium was haunted in your book.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like a really cool thing. We got actually chewed out by the Tigers media department when we went there to get credentials second time. He said, why isn't there anything in the book? And I had actually heard from a rumor from a minor league umpire years ago who lived in near Tiger Stadium that there was ghost stories there, and I kind of didn't really find, you know, Mickey and I did like all the hard research with the, you know, we always try to, you know, dig up the old newspaper archives and all that stuff and try to and check with historians and see what's out there, and we couldn't find anything. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Mickey went out there and I kind of went out there too at one point, and we just basically started to you know, walk through the neighborhoods and talk to folks and then, you know, talk to the workers and the security guards and the Tiger Stadium. The stadium has been plowed over now, it's gone, but it was earlier this last year actually. But you know, they had some bizarre stories about the ghost of Ty Cobb, you know, him running the bases, you know, seeing his apparition and hearing the roar of the crowd, to you know, things like security guards claiming to see apparitions in the security office, to feeling a tap on the shoulder sometimes, and hearing, like, you know, hearing voices and that kind of thing. Cobb has also been seen across the street from Tiger Stadium, where his former office was. It's now a cab company, and, you know, workers there say that they see him walking down the upstairs on the second floor down a hallway. Huh. Yeah, he's also seen the new ballpark. But, like, some really eerie stories, too, like one security guard claiming that he was, you know, sitting there watching TV and he saw scratches, like, start to form on his forearm.
Ty Cobb's arm or the guy's arm?
all the guys on.
Okay. Ty Cobb was scratching his arm.
Oh, maybe, yeah. Cobb was, a rough player, so it's possible.
He came back and just, he's attacking fans now.
Yeah.
Listen, there's if another... I'm here, I'm scratching somebody.
Yeah, there's no players here, so I got to...
Why would anybody, if you believe that places can be, for the lack of a better word, haunted, why would you not believe that sports stadiums, you know, wouldn't be? Because some of the most life-altering moments happen inside those stadiums. Mm-hmm. And the same with the fans.
Yeah.
You know, there are fans that live and die by their team. And, you know, I don't know why anybody would question the fact that a sports, especially something as old and historic as like the old Tiger Stadium, you know, and the old ones that have now been torn down and these huge monstrosities built. But, I can't imagine that they're not. They don't have spirits.
It's the same principle as theaters. Mm-hmm. You know, you always hear theaters because there's a lot of energy and emotion spilled out. I think there's more emotion spilled out over a game.
Oh,
I mean, because you get so wrapped up. I mean, you get more wrapped up in, football season's in. I'm a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan. But, I mean, even, people live and die by the Yankees. People live and die by the Red Sox. It's almost a personal affront to them.
Yeah.
The fact that they would go and bury a jersey under 5 feet of cement, to try to curse the Yankees. That takes a lot of planning. I still can't get over that story. It's unbelievable. We're running out of time here. I'm looking here. There's two different stories that I had written down. I don't know how long they'll take. I'll go with the first one. It says here, about a Florida League game where a ball seems to vanish into thin air.
Yeah.
I have to ask that one. The other one's kind of a heartwarming story, but I got to ask about the ball vanishing. What exactly happened?
Yeah, there was a pop-up. It was a high A level minor league game in Florida, in Key West, and the visiting team, the St. Pete Cards, were in the outfield, and that was a pop-up. And the outfield, everybody on the field thought it was going to just clear the second base and land. And so the outfielders were charging in. The second baseman was backing up. The left fielder was backing up second base, and then all of a sudden the right fielder shrugged, and then the center fielder shrugged. It's like, where's the ball? And then second base, everyone's throwing their hands in the air, and even the hitter himself, he stopped at first base, ready to turn around and head to the dugout, and everyone's yelling at him, and then they're like, go, 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 he hesitantly went to second, and he haltingly went around all the bases, and it was just kind of a bizarre thing. And there were a lot of famous players there. Bruce Sutter, went on to play with the Braves and the Cardinals and Cubs, and he a Hall of Famer. And guys like Gary Templeton, guys, and I interviewed some of these guys, and they all, everyone that we interviewed said that we couldn't get a hold of Sutter, but everyone else we interviewed said that that there was a pop up and vanished, and it couldn't have gone foul, and it couldn't have been a home run. Some were blaming the paranormal and Key West, the UFO.
Let me tell you, Key West. I just got back from Key West last week, and it is one of the most haunted places in the entire country. There are so many spirits trapped on that island. Not that any of them revealed themselves to me, mind you, but it really is. So
you
heard, I know exactly
right?
Where that field is. It's right next to Kmart, actually.
Well, there you go.
I know where it's at.
There was a blue light special. That's not paranormal. Someone got a baseball for half price.
Yeah.
Now, is there any video of this happening?
No video. Just one journalist's account of it. That's how we found out about it. And we got it, firsthand from the players. That's yeah, but it was they swear jump up and swear up and down, and there's one guy's a manager now, Gary Templeton. He's got his reputation on the line. And he still swears by it.
Well, Dan, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. As soon as Nick gets our website back up online, he's going to have your books listed so that any of our listeners can go there and check it out. Whispersradio.com for those of you listening.
I think I'm going to blame the Yankees for this one, too. The fact that my website's down. I get a Red Sox fan on, and the next day it's gone. So this hasn't happened in 2 or 3 years. I don't even know what's happened.
Darn, yeah, there's a lot of karma in baseball.
I'll take him down. If Mickey had been on there, we wouldn't, but all right.
All right, well, I want to thank you for joining us, and we'll be talking to you again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoy being on again.
All right, Dan, have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
Bye. Now, Lola, when Nick mentioned theaters, too, I want to say we were at the Capitol this weekend, and all the pictures we took had orbs in them.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch.
But orbs don't exist.
I thought you would enjoy that.
Yeah, there
I
was a bunch of
out.
Them. There's a bunch of orbs
I'm
in
sure there
pictures.
Are. I showed you out. The one that Olivia took with that huge orb right in the middle. Yeah.
Huh. Rub it in their face.
I am so proven right. Well, I showed you my ones from Key West. There is absolutely no doubt.
Yeah, one looked like a street light.
Yeah,
but there
was
no
light there.
Yeah.
And the other one, honestly, somebody looked at the one and said, well, that's a reflection of the moon in the windows. Well, first of all, the moon would have been behind the house, and it was the dark of the moon that week we were there. So... Yes, I do believe in. And I will admit, there are some that I know, particularly those ones taken in the pen, that it's dust, you know. But then there are other ones that, and I'll tell you what I did. Linda's computer has some, I don't know, picture program on it. It's a Vista program. And you can really mess with the brightness.
Yeah.
And when I take those nighttime shots of Key West... and lighten them up just a little bit. Oh, my gosh, the amount. Like that, what they call the Milky Way behind that Episcopalian church.
Yeah.
Hundreds of them.
Really?
Hundreds of them.
Wow. Just coming out looking for...
Looking for Lola.
Why don't they say something to me? You know, it's like, what the heck?
Do you really want that, though?
Yeah.
Really?
I do, at least once. I want one ghosty to go.
One ghost.
Hi. I'm something.
It's going to be some old Englishman with, like, half-rotted face. And be like,
oh,
Lola!
Yeah, you're going to be like, I was hoping for a pirate. I really wanted a pirate.
Are ye Lola?
I had to go all the way to Fort Myers for pirates.
Come on, walk across me, Blake.
I found a pirate there. Oh, lordy lord. He was cute.
Easy. Was this the one with the cowboy hat? That's
no, this was a pirate.
Peg leg?
No.
Well, how can you tell he's a pirate?
Because he was dressed like a pirate. Oh, God.
Nick dresses like a pirate.
Unless you got a patch or a peg leg, I'm lost.
You at least have a parrot.
You got to have long black hair.
Oh, he didn't have a parrot. He had a sword and a goblet full of wine.
He could have been French.
Yeah.
No, he was British.
No chap.
I discovered
was
that.
Was he snooty?
Of course he was. He was a snooty British pirate.
Oh.
Jeez, Nick. You got to have pictures drawn?
You have a picture?
Yeah. Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. I do.
I got to see that.
All right, it's 7 o'clock, time for CNN. We'll be right back after this.
Now it's time for Whispers, your number one source for all things paranormal. With your hosts, Jordan Klein and Nick Queen, and produced by the lovely Lola Miller, Whispers is brought to you by West Virginia Penitentiary Tours. At the West Virginia State Penitentiary in Moundsville, unforgettable, historical, educational.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Whispers Radio here on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog. Sorry, I don't know. I had something in my throat right there. It's 7:10, 56 degrees here in downtown Wheeling. On the phone with us right now, Mr. Richard Demas. Maybe.
We might.
Possibly.
What is happening
in
here?
In a second.
Okay, our website's down. WKKX, you're
talking. I'm here.
Oh,
hey!
All right, Richard runs the Foggy Bottom Festival. Is it Festival of Fright?
Yes, the Festival of Fright.
Well, I was there Saturday with Rachel, and you were telling us a story You're not on?
No.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah, you're on.
What's that?
You were telling us a story about a little girl and some other stuff going on.
Oh, yeah. That,
you want to share some stories?
We've had some interesting things happening. It seems to be picking up and gaining speed. I don't know what might be causing that, but, you know, hopefully it's not like, you know, everything's coming together like Ghostbusters, you know, or something. we started the Festival of Fright 12 years ago, and my original partner was a man by the name of Chris Ferris, and he was a magician and a mentalist, and his mother was a tarot card reader, and he's real sensitive to paranormal phenomena. And he came up to us one day and he said, there's a room in the Legend House that we're just going to use for a storage room. He said, we're not going to, you know, no, we're not going to let the public in there. And so I said, why is that? He said, well, there's a very negative, angry kind of male presence in that room. And we just don't want just anybody walking through there, you know. We have all the public walking through there. And I said, well, not a problem. We won't use that space. You know, we'll just use it as a storage closet. And I didn't think anything about it. I'm real insensitive to paranormal activity, okay?
Uh-huh.
I've never seen anything or witnessed anything, you know. And, well, he left after 3 years. And long about the sixth year that we were open, a fellow named David showed up, and he had never met Chris, had no, you know, obviously it was like 3 years after Chris had left, and had no idea of anything that Chris had come to us about. And he came to us and he said, look, he says, I don't want to freak you guys out, he says, but my family does paranormal investigations. The house I grew up in has been on national television a few times.
Uh-huh.
We've got video of my aunt crossing the hallway, you know, my aunt's ghost going through the hallway and that kind of thing.
Wow.
And he said, there's a really negative, angry male presence on the second floor in the storage room.
The same room?
And it really, yeah, the exact same spot that, you know, Chris had said like 5-6 years earlier. And so that really kind of really started wigging my wife out a little bit. And since then, we've also started having how he manifests himself is anybody that works up in that area
uh-huh.
for very long starts getting very argumentative, and they start, you know,
real,
you know,
angry, irritable.
Yeah,
they
start getting agitated and taking that on. You know, if they stay in that space too long. And so that's, you know, like I said, we don't use that space too much.
Wow.
Just as a storage area.
Now, is it open this season?
Yeah.
That room?
Oh, no. We still use that just as a storage space.
Can we put Jordan in there?
What's been happening over, like, the last about six years, I think, one of the guys that works for us, was in the house, and he was working, and he heard a little girl calling for my wife, calling my wife's name.
Really?
And she kept walking around calling my wife's name, and it was like, finally he comes downstairs and goes outside and goes up to my wife. She was riding the lawn tractor, and he says, did that little girl find you? And she says, what little girl? And he says, the little girl's been walking around calling your name. And she says, Rusty, I've been out here for an hour and a half, and nobody has come in or out of the building. And he just shut the mower off, said, come on, we're going to lunch.
We're not here.
So since then, we've started seeing more of the little girl has been seen more and more over the last 6 years. It seems to be gaining momentum. And, you know, so it... there's people that have seen her. Basically, she stays either in Legend House or within about maybe 20 to 25 feet outside of Legend House is kind of the area that she has been seen.
Now, did you give the little girl a name?
Well, no, not really.
the story, the legend of Foggy Bottom that goes with the haunted house, we talk about Jebediah Fogg and his daughter Sarah disappearing into the fog. So a lot of the actors have started, you know, referring to her as Sarah.
Okay, makes sense.
And so, but the thing is, it's like, you know, when she's calling my wife's name, we haven't figured out who it might actually be because my wife's mother had the same name. So it might be a little girl that knew her mother, you know. So we're just not sure exactly where the, you know, where this is coming from. We had one woman walked up to the building this summer and said when she walked up to the building, she saw the little girl in the window looking out at her, which is really amazing since the window is like boarded over on the inside. So it's like, yeah, there's no way anybody could be in there.
Wow.
That's
it. A real haunted house, haunted attraction right here in Wheeling.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's been other parts, other sightings actually here on the property. There's been people who said that they've seen a tall, thin man working in the shop. It's like a workshop that we use, you know, and it's just a workspace. But that's where her father and her uncle would go and work every day when they were working on the farm. This farm's been in my wife's family for over 100 years, easy. She thinks it may go back to the 1860s.
Wow. Now, so, if I'm right here, Saturday night when we were there, you said that one of your workers just saw the little girl.
Right,
correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. A young man named Chris was standing in the hallway, and he said he was talking to another person, and he looked over and saw a little girl standing in the, you know, in the hallway, and at first thought it was another actor. And he started to turn his head away, and he thought, no, that's not. And he turned back, and she was gone.
Wow.
And then the next night, Sunday night after you guys were here, one of the women that works the show was seated in the barn outside the Legend House. She was seated in the barn that's directly opposite.
Okay.
And she was sitting there looking at Legend House all evening, and she said she saw the little girl kind of dancing out in front of the Legend House. And then she started hearing, like, male voices.
Really?
Right outside the barn, and when she got up to look, there was, like, nobody there.
Well, we've guaranteed so far that Nick will not go.
Is
Nick a big chicken? Is that?
Well, Nick's afraid of kids.
I'm afraid of kid ghosts. And yes, I am. When it comes to that,
here's the thing, Nick. Like I say, I'm totally insensitive to this kind of stuff, okay? I've actually had one person who is very sensitive to it say that part of the reason why I don't see this stuff is because they, you know, these spirits or, you know, whatever you want to call it, sense that I'm a big, you know, skeptic. And so they, you know, kind of avoid me.
Yeah.
So
far.
Yeah, so far. But I spend more time down there than anybody, probably.
Really?
And, you know, I'm down there even late at night. And like I say, I just don't pick up on any of that kind of stuff, you know.
But other people are seeing her. What nights are you open and what time so that any of our listeners want to get out there and see if they can see the little girl?
We've got two more weekends. And we're open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evenings. I would recommend coming on Sunday evenings because the lower traffic flow will, you know, you might stand a better chance of seeing something when there's not as many people around.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that a lot of things are on Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday evening, like I say, when there's fewer people around and that kind of thing, yeah.
Okay, and we are going to be able to give two tickets away for next week's call-in show.
Yep.
For that weekend, correct?
Most certainly, yeah.
That's going to be great. Check it out, Foggy Bottom Festival of Frights down in the Elm Grove Is it the Elm Grove Terrace area?
Yeah, Elm Grove, next to Elm Grove Lanes.
Okay.
And then go to festivalofright.net and check out, get all the information. Tickets go on sale at 6. The screaming starts when the sun goes down.
Here we go.
The ticket booth is going to close on Friday and Saturdays between 11 and 11:30, okay, depending on how heavy the traffic is.
Uh-huh.
And on Sundays, it closes. The ticket booth shuts down by 9:30.
All right. Well, Richard Demas, thank you very much. Foggy Bottom Festival of Frights. And we'll have some tickets to give away at next week's show.
Sounds good, Richard. Take care.
Bye. Nikki, we got our other guest on the line. You want to give an introduction?
I can do that. Give me one second here. I'm having trouble with my computer again. So it's one of those days.
Yeah.
our next guest is Randy Rogers. Randy, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm sorry, I hate that I can't. I'm with you.
I'm not sure anyone else is. I can't get any links to work for this. So.
I've got people up and wanting to listen
on Facebook, but none of the links seem to be working.
The government is shutting us down, Randy.
Is that it?
Slowly, link by link. I don't know. I have a call out for my the guy that runs the website bandwidth and that kind of stuff in the back end. Hopefully he'll get it fixed here
soon. The show is being recorded, so
okay.
Don't worry about that.
Also, we'll be up on a podcast later.
Yeah,
yes, yes. In fact, I'll get that link to you once I upload it.
Mm-hmm.
I will email the link to you.
Great.
And you can post it on your Facebook for those that want to listen. All will be well.
Great.
Awesome. So,
now, Randy, it's been a while since we talked to you.
Yeah, it was a long summer. I know I promised you guys I was going to stop by and do a regression with you, and I had all intentions of doing that, but as fate would have it, other things got in my way this summer, and I just couldn't even find the time to get back through Wheeling or make the stop there. It did go through there, but it took me all of 2 minutes as I crossed over the bridge, you know.
Now, for our listeners that are able to hear us right now, explain what a regression is.
Sure. A regression, a past life regression, is what we're talking about, and that's where, through the use of hypnosis, I would put you under hypnosis, and you can go back and review a past life that you lived, tell a story about who you were in another lifetime.
Wow.
And I've been having really great success with it all summer. To give a backstory of how I ended up into this, I wrote a book called The Key of Life, A Metaphysical Investigation. And it was a true story of events that happened in my life where I started following the synchronistic path of things that were happening with me, following one clue after another. And it led me to a Russian acupuncturist who put these needles in me. And then I went into these past life regressions with it. And when the story came out, and I've been going around talking and doing book signings, everyone immediately wants to go meet this Russian acupuncturist. her name's Lucy Postoloff, and she's out here in Los Angeles. But that's not really feasible for everyone to fly out to L.A. and spend $150 an hour doing past life regressions. So I went and sought out the best hypnotherapist I could find, which was Dick Sutphin. And he's been doing it since the 70s. He lives out here in Malibu. And coincidentally, he was doing a workshop down in Marina Del Rey, right over the hill from my house. So I went down and I spent a week with him training. And he trained me and certified me as a past life hypnotherapist, trained me how to hypnotize people and put them into a regression. And it is an incredible tool and very helpful in understanding exactly what's going on in your life currently and why it may be going on. This can be anything from relationship issues or phobias and fears or stop smoking or lose weight or all these kind of things all tie into something that happened in your past.
Wow. Lola?
Well, I just want to say, Randy, I read your book, and I found it absolutely fascinating. And,
thank you.
You know, I'm really hoping that you would get through here, but certainly not under the circumstances
right.
that you did.
Well, yeah, to let the readers know or viewers know what happened was I started on a tour this summer and was back gone through Albany, Virginia and all that. But at the end of the tour, my mom had gotten sick, and I went back up into Johnstown, Pennsylvania to be with her. And she ended up going from bad to worse, and I ended up having to put her into hospice care. And I spent the summer with her until she passed away a couple of weeks ago. And it was probably the most incredible experience of my life to be there with her for those last weeks, and the stories I have to tell tonight that about what happens after you die and what happened with her during those past weeks are probably going to raise the hairs on your arm there.
I'm ready for it.
So to begin with, what happened was she had had a heart attack earlier in the year, and then she was recovering from that. But, you know, there's a point in your life where no matter what you do, you're trying to fix one thing and another thing keeps happening. And she was 80 years old. And when we got her into the hospital, and make a long story short, they found out she had stomach cancer, and it was, you know, terminal. There wasn't much you could do with it. I mean, to try to do anything was ridiculously crazy. And she didn't want to do that, so she wanted to be made comfortable. So we found a great place up in a little town called Winbur, just outside of Johnstown. And it was a small little hospital, great care. And as soon as I got her in there, she wasn't in there about a week, and she knew what I was doing. And I'd written this book. She'd heard me on the radio talking about these things. And I said to her, but she had never done one of these regressions.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, Mom, how would you like to do one of these regressions? I can let you go and see where you're going to be heading to, you know, off into the other side. And I can take you over there now for a little visit. And she was all excited. Oh, yeah, I want to do this. So, okay, so I brought in a CD. I shut the door to the room and put a sign on it, do not disturb, you know, because they're in and out of there all the time with the nurses and that. But they let us alone, and I put on the music, and I hypnotized her, put her on, and she went immediately under easily. Hmm. And she gets over into this life. Well, before she went into a past life, she went into a current life, a story that happened back before I was born, when she was a young girl and was dating my dad. And she was out on a date with him and describes this whole thing with where they didn't get home until really late, like 2 or 3 in the morning, which was, you know, grounds to be shot back then as a date. But she just remembered how strict her father was, and it was in a really emotional moment with her reliving this time and what she felt that her father was overly strict with her, and she always promised. She was crying when she was under talking about this and saying that she was never going to be that way with her kids when she had them. And she wasn't. She really let us have, you know, as long as we told her where we were, she never really restricted us on being out or doing things, and as long as it wasn't anything illegal. And so we had a really great childhood growing up. And so I continued regressing her back, and I said, now we're going to move back further and further in time and back it through the tunnel. And she went deeper, and all of a sudden she emerged out in early, like 1900, at the turn of the century, in Germany. And she was then a young boy, in her teens, I guess. And my father in this life was her friend back then. He was also a German boy. And the two of them were childhood friends, and they were, but the story moved along. They were riding in a car one day, and got in this accident, and my mother dies. My mother leaves her body and sees herself floating away from this scene.
Wow.
So she's talking about how she's this German boy and all this stuff about Germany and what it was like. And so I take her to higher self. What I do, call it an angel, a guardian angel, or a spirit. There's someone that's guiding you along in this life you're in. And it can be that inner voice you hear in your head or those thoughts or feelings that come through to you. But that's coming from a spirit guiding you along. When I get you over in this case or state of hypnosis, you're actually going to meet this person. They're going to show up. You're going to see what they look like, and you're going to be able to talk with them and understand exactly what you were here to learn in this life, what your karmic lessons were. So I have my mother over there. I get my mother up to this other side, and immediately who starts to show up are all these relatives that had passed on. That's another thing that will show up later. Usually I call for any relatives or friends that passed over that would like to come forward, and usually one or two. Well, in my mother's case, it was just dozens and dozens of friends and relatives were showing up, and she was, I mean, to see her there in that state, she was just in bliss. She realized what it was like, going to be like to be where you might want to call heaven, but the other side, you know, over on the other side. So the whole thing plays out. Everyone shows up, all these different characters, and I bring her back out of the regression. And when I was finished with it, I said, well, you know, Mom, did you notice who wasn't there for it? And I said, you know somebody wasn't there? She goes, who? And I said, well, you notice Dad wasn't there, because my dad had passed away 7 years ago.
Hmm.
And I said, you notice Dad wasn't there? And she said, yeah, I saw it. I said, where do you think he was? And my mom says, well, he was probably out metal detecting, because that's what he liked to do as a hobby. And I said, well, you know, you're right. He probably was. But I said, the reason he didn't show up was he's waiting for the big day when you finally do pass on. He'll be here. Not long. It's not going to be long here. A few, you know, days or weeks. I didn't know what we had left, but whatever it was, he'll be along here, and you'll see him. When you see him, you're going to know it's time to go. So she just had this great time with that. So move ahead a couple of weeks. We're about a week away from my mom passing away, and she's drifting in and out of consciousness and, you know, rambling. She's kind of on she's all morphined up so that she doesn't have any pain. But, you know, the consciousness, it's in and out of consciousness. And one of the times when she came out of consciousness, my sister was sitting there with me with her, and all of a sudden my mom just starts speaking in German. Now, my mom did not speak German. Louise Rogers did not speak German in his lifetime. She knew nothing about German. The closest thing she knew about German was that I had our aunt Ingrid, who was married to her brother. Her brother had married a German woman over in the 60s when he was over there stationed in Europe, and my aunt had passed away. She's over on the other side, too. In fact, she was one of the ones she had met when she was over there. So now here, I'm sitting here with my sister, and my mom starts speaking in German. And Rosemary looks at me and says, "Is that German?" I said, "Yeah, that's." It wasn't just a word or two, either. It was a whole bunch of sentences.
Oh,
I had
wow.
no clue what she said. And I'm sitting there going, I said, "Well, you know, I just regressed her a few weeks ago, and she was talking about this life, the last life she lived in, and it was she was a boy in Germany." And I said, "The minute you're close to going, the mask starts to drop away of, because you have a, you know, like we talked about before, last time I had you on it, we play these roles, and, you know, you have the mask over you. You're Nick Queen and Jordan Klein and Lola Miller. You're all playing those characters.
Yeah.
But the minute you can let go of that, everything else is shut off. All your past lives are shut off. You can't have access to them in your conscious state. But when you're drifting close to the other side and you're almost out of here, boy, you can start to speak any of the languages you knew from all these other characters, and they just start flowing through like that. So my sister was just shaken when she hears her talking in German there. So it moves along, and finally we get to the morning of September 17th, and I get this phone call. I'm at home in my mom's house, and my brother calls early in the morning, says, "You better get up here. Your breathing's changed." And my one brother and sister had been staying with her, so we ran up to the hospital, and we're in the hospice with her. And I said, and I walked up, and I said, "Yeah, she's getting close now." There were two sisters and my brother in there, and it seemed a little crowded, and I didn't really feel like I need to be in the room with her. I knew I could have been in California for all that mattered right now, because I knew I would know when my mom was going to pass over.
Yeah.
So I went out in the lobby and I started doing a Sudoku puzzle, which is something my mom always liked to do. So I'm in there playing the Sudoku puzzle, and my brother Jeff comes walking out and he says, "I'm going home and take a shower and change my clothes," because he had been there all night. And I'm thinking, "Wow, you're leaving now? It's like really close here." But I didn't say anything. I thought, "You go and do what you're going to do." So he goes to walk outside and he comes back in and he says, "You know, the lights on your car are on out there." And I said, "Yeah." I go, it was my mom's car and I was driving it.
Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah, that started yesterday." I said, "She's so close to going." I said, "Her energy is just turning everything on." I said, "She's turning, the lights just started turning off and on inside the car without the key on."
Wow.
Yeah. And this car was in perfect condition. There's no reason for this to be happening. So I said, and he walked out. And as soon as he left, I felt my mother coming into me saying, "Go out and sit in the car." So I went out and I sat down in the car. And the lights are on in it, the interior lights. So I reached over, and the switch is off. So I turned the switch back on, and then I turned it off again, and the lights go off. And as soon as they go off, and I pulled my hand back, they turn back on again. And not only did the lights turn on, the door locks all flipped up, and the door jar light started ringing off and on like a pinball machine. And I have the key in my hand. The key is not in the car. None of this is being created by me. So I said, all right, Mom. I reached over and I turned on the switch again and turned them off again. And everything went off again, and I pulled my hand away, and bing, they just started, and it was like being in Las Vegas. It was ding, 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 the doors up and down.
Wow.
And, I mean, tears were coming down my eyes, and I said, out of my eyes, I said, "Mom," I said, "just please shut out the lights and keep them out." And bam, the entire car went dead.
Wow.
The lights went down, the locks shut off, the jar light quit ringing. And I felt my mother's presence leave. I felt her just whish through me, you know, and gone. And I stepped out of the car, and I shut the door, and I looked at it, and everything was dead. Nothing came back on, and I bolted into the place. And it was like a scene out of a movie when I ran in there. I ran in, down the hospice, flung open the door, and there were my two sisters there holding my mom's hand, and they looking up at me, and they're going, "She's gone. We think she's gone." I said, "Oh, no, she's gone." I said, "I felt her. She rang all the lights on the way out." They said, "We were just going to come get you." I said, "You didn't have to. Mom stopped and got me, you know, on the way out. And I ran up to her. I put my hand on her chest, and she was done breathing. And I, you know, I said, "Good one, Mom." And that was it. It was, and at that moment, this is what made it look like a movie. At that moment, Amazing Grace was playing on the CD. Started playing on the CD.
Wow.
She had a CD with songs playing, and at that moment, that song triggered. And you know how emotional that song is to see that scene with your mom there, passed away, and your sisters. And boy, it was just really an incredible moment to be there. So now she's gone, right? And now the car has quit doing the ringing and the ding and everything else. She's moved on to that. But then what happened over the course of the next few days is where I was able to show people how you can talk with this other side, how you communicate with the other side. Because before my mother left, she was asking me, "How am I going to stay in communications with you? How am I going to be able to communicate?" And I said, "Well, don't worry, Mom. I'm going to be meeting a lot of Louises and Louise Rogers coming into my life." I said, don't worry on how you'll get the message over. It will always be there, and I'll know it." So that was one of the things I talked with her the week before. And later on, when I tell you a few stories, you're going to see how that came to play in the next week or so after she passed.
Wow.
But what happened was the next day, I was in my house, and my brother Tom had come in, and he was walking around looking at different things in my mom's house because we were clearing this place out to get everything out of there. And he saw this picture on the wall of this German castle, and underneath it was all this writing in German. And it was something, obviously, my Aunt Ingrid had sent to my mother, and I had no clue what it said on it. He's asked me, "What's this say?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I don't speak German." I said, "Why don't you translate it with the Google Translator, you know, on the computer?" So he took this photo off, or this, you know, picture off the wall and set it on the desk there, and he typed the whole paragraph in, and it came up kind of just gobbledygook, didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, do one word at a time, Tom." And he started typing in each word and coming up with a translation on the first word and the second word. And I was standing over his shoulder watching him do this, and all of a sudden I felt my mother come into me. And I said exactly what she said to me as she came in, her thoughts came into my voice. And I reached down at this point and I grabbed the picture and I said, "You know, if you flip the thing over, you idiots, you'll see what it says in English on the back." And I flipped it over, and there on the back, written in my mother's handwriting on a little note attached in the back, was the translation in English. And my brother looks at this, and he goes, and he looks up, he said, "Well, if you knew that, what the hell did you have to do with this for?" And I said, "Tom, I didn't know that. I'm just telling you what Mom just said to me. Did you hear what she called us? She said, 'You idiots,' you know. She was joking with us that you bozos are sitting there typing this away, and it's written on the back what it said." And so I started laughing. He goes, "How do you do that?" I said, "Well, can't you? I can just hear her." I said, "You can't hear her talking to you?" And I said, "You just have to be quiet." So 2 days later, we had a memorial luncheon for her, and we came back to the house, and my brother, again, is racing around later that afternoon, ripping through the house and looking for something, and finally I'm going, "Tom, what are you tearing the place apart looking for?" And he said, "I'm trying to find these lottery tickets that I bought. I played these numbers that I found that Mom had, and I thought maybe I should play them, and I bought these tickets, but I've lost them." And so he's back in there rummaging through the house, and I'm sitting there really quiet, and I can hear my mom come into me again. And I just yelled out what she said to me. I said, "You know, if you go into the closet and you look in your sports coat jacket in the breast pocket of it, I said, you'll find the lottery ticket in there. And there's no sound. It's dead silence. I hear this closet door slide open. And the next thing I hear is my brother Tom saying, 'Randy, are you talking to Mom again?'" And I said, "Where do you think I got that from, Tom?" I said, "I have no clue where your lottery tickets are." I said, "Were they there?" And he said, "Yeah." He goes, "How do you do that? How do you do that?" And I said, "Well, it's very simple." I said, "You just have to be quiet and allow the feelings to flow through you." And I said, "And you let them come into you. You can hear the thoughts come into your mind and just say what she says." And I mean, story after story after story like that happened. I mean, but the coolest thing she can do for me now, I mean, I used to call my mom every Saturday, and I was driving up the freeway, you know, when I was driving up the freeway, I was going out to my hangar, and I usually go out there on Saturdays to mess around with the planes, and I'm driving up the 405, and I'm by habit, I go to reach for the phone to call her, and I'm thinking, "Oh, my God, I don't have to call my mother anyway. She's right here. I could just, there is no phone call. I don't have to go to Pennsylvania to see her. She's instantly accessible, and it's the coolest thing to be able to operate on that level."
Now, have you ever, were you able to speak to the other side before, or is this?
Oh yeah, no. I mean, in my book, I talk about things of people that had come to me. My friend David Cooper and another friend's father, and things like that, and on how you much you want to let go come through to you. My dad, for instance, talks to me all the time. And the synchronicities, I probably shared some of those on the last show. I'm not sure that of the things that happened with him and with me. And that was while my mother was still alive. And the signs are so easy to read and understand. And for the viewer or the listener out there, it's going to be a sound, a smell, just a thought of that person that's gone will come into you for no reason. And that is them trying to make communication with you right there. And try to grab onto that message, because it's going to be just a simple hello for the most part. I mean, that's really what it's going
to
be.
Easy for you to say, Randy.
Oh, no,
I keep trying this all the time. And
Lola wants an experience so bad.
Well, but now he's talking about his mom, and my mom passed away about 2 years ago. And I talk to her every day, as crazy as that sounds. She has yet to answer me. I don't know.
Well,
maybe
you may be missing the answers, and they're simple little things. It's going to be, a flower that she liked that you remembered she liked, and you saw it, and it made you think of her. And that thought of her is the communications from that other side. It's so basically simple. I mean, you remember the story. I don't know if you remember it, or I could probably repeat it again because a lot of people may be listening for the first time. But when I almost died 7 years ago, I had this acute pancreatitis that gallstone had passed into my bile duct, and ended up in the hospital near death. Got out of the hospital, but I was at home trying to recover, and I wasn't doing well. Had to go in for more surgery. And the night before I went in, my mother called me, and she was worried about losing me. I was in really, really bad shape, and she said that I talked to Dad last night, and my dad had passed away, earlier that year, and he's going to be there right beside you the whole time, and don't worry, he's going to take care of you, and he'll be right beside your head the whole time you're in surgery. And I said, well, Mom, I'm not worried. I'm not going to die. I know what's going to happen. I said, don't worry about me. And she said, no, but Dad's going to be there. I said, well, okay, thanks. And next day I get wheeled into surgery, and the doctor walks up to me, sticks out his hand, and says, hi, I'm Bob Rogers. I'm your anesthesiologist.
Well, that's your dad's name.
That was my dad's name. Same name, spelling, on the name tag. I looked up at him, and I shook his hand. I said, of course you are. I couldn't expect anything else less in my life. I said, my mom said last night my dad was going to be standing next to me the entire time. And I could clearly feel my dad around me at that moment. And that's how they send the message. It's with me, it's dynamic. I don't know why it's so dynamic. But these instances happen like this. So then, to really solidify you on this story, and I'm not sure I told you the rest of this, but a year later, or, well, 7 years later, a year ago in August 21st, 2009, I signed a deal for my book. Uh-huh. And that day after I got off the phone with my publisher, and my publicist, Sarah Scarlett, I hired that day on the phone, and she told me to put down these 10 questions that everyone would ask me. And the first question, a producer friend of mine came into the office and was going to help me work on this, and I said, well, the one question is, everyone says, does this stuff still happen to you? And I said, well, yeah, and I relayed that story about my dad. And I said, that's just one of dozens. And I said, I'd really like to hear from him like that again. Now, that was at 5 o'clock on August 21st, 2009. At 8 o'clock that evening, I'm sitting at home in my easy chair. I just sat down, came in, and all of a sudden, I could feel these thoughts coming in, go check your email. And I'm like most people, I push that away, go, oh, yeah, I'll check it later. No, check it now. So I got up and went to my computer, and the Internet was down. So again, like most people, well, I'll just check it tomorrow or whenever it comes back on. No, check it now. And so I reached down and grabbed my phone, and I could download the messages through my phone. So I it's a different server, and I clicked on that, and I'm waiting for these dozen or so messages to download. And they download, and I click on the first message to open it up. Pops open from a Bob Rogers, and I stand there, and my hand is shaking so badly. I'm thinking, 3 hours ago I asked to hear from my dad the same way, and now I'm here holding an email from a Bob Rogers, and I know no other Bob Rogers. And I'm thinking, could he possibly gotten to a terminal somewhere and gotten me a real message? But I opened this message up, and it was from a Bob Rogers out of Evanston, Illinois. And he starts to write, Dear Randy, I was on the Internet today looking for a friend of mine named Steve Crow, and I saw this video tribute you put up to him and wondered if you could tell me what happened to him. I hadn't heard from him in over a year, and obviously he's passed away, and I didn't know it. and he signs it Bob Rogers. Well, Steve Crow was a friend of mine that worked at NBC with me. We both flew these World War II planes and hung out at the same airport. He passed away over a year earlier. We had a tribute and flew a B-25 over for him at the airport. And when we did that, I shot it and put a little video tribute up on my YouTube site. And okay. I forgot about it. That was a year earlier. And now, on this day, when I asked to hear from my father, this guy goes looking for him and calls me up, this guy named Bob Rogers. So I told him what happened to Steve. I sent him a message. But then I said, you know, Bob, this is what happened to me. And I told him what I had just done that day, asking to hear from my dad the same way. And you decide to write me this note. And I said, I investigate this. I want to know what made you go on the Internet looking for Steve today. And he said, I knew what he was going to say, but this is what he said. He said, I felt Steve come into my thoughts, and I had to go look for him. And I said, I hope you understand that was Steve saying hello to you from the other side. When you felt those thoughts that you had to look for Steve, that was Steve directly talking to you. So when you feel the thoughts of your mother come into you for no matter what reason, and you weren't thinking about her at the time, and I know this has happened, that you could be driving your car doing something completely unrelated, and the thought of her comes in. That is communication with the other side. They are entering your thoughts, and they easily can do that. They turn your thoughts to them, and there may be another synchronicity that ties at that moment to them. It will be a song on the radio, a smell, a perfume, a cigar that your father may have smoked, or whatever it is that made you think of them. That was them saying hello.
Okay, Randy.
So now, Lola, have you had anything like this?
Well, you know, I'm going to have to pay better attention because, of course, there are a lot of times, you know, where something comes on TV or like I just got back from vacation. And it was a wonderful trip. I was gone 11 days. We went down to the Keys and the Everglades and Fort Myers, you know, so it was one of these things where we were constantly saying, God, Mom and Dad would love this. Mom and Dad would love this. And so she's really been in my, particularly Mom, in my thoughts the last two or three weeks.
Right.
But I've got another question.
Uh-huh.
I tend to have very vivid dreams. And I think I told you this the last time you were on. Most of my dreams have something to do with either living by a body of water, living on a boat. Now I have this really weird fascination with all these shows like Deadliest Catch and Swords, Life on the Line and Lobster Men and all this kind of junk. So I'm thinking, could that possibly be some kind of reflection back to a life I had before? Because didn't you say that, you know, the weird little things that happen
your life? Most definitely. What you're attracted to are things that occurred in your past. When I've been going along this country doing these regressions, it's incredible the stories that come out of people and how it ties to what they're doing in the current day. For instance, a woman who, in her current day now, just loves to just drop everything and take off and go things, doesn't want to stay attached to her house and her family and her kids, just constantly wants to be moving, flitting about here or there on a trip here or a trip here. Well, when I put her under regression, she goes back into the late 1800s, and finds out she was a gypsy with this band of gypsies. She was pregnant. She had she ended up having a young baby girl, and the baby girl actually made her settle her life down and become a nanny or a charge for a banker's children, like 8 children of this banker. And the banker in her past life was her mother in this life. And she clearly recognized this person in the past when she's telling this whole story. When she comes back out of it, she relates to how her life is like that now, is currently that way, that she, you know, she still has that gypsy in her, and she doesn't want to settle down. She just wants to constantly be on the roam, yet her family is holding her down to it. But now that she saw what caused it out of the past, she can let go of some of that and let go of that. I don't have to play the role of the gypsy anymore. I did that in a past life.
Oh, Randy, I so want to.
I know.
It's like you just have no idea. Ever since we had you on the first time, and then I read your book, and it was just like, oh, my gosh, I so want some answers. And I really think that you know, this would give me some answers.
Well, I will be coming back there again. I've got more speaking engagements and things that are lining up in Pennsylvania again. And so this time when I come back, I won't be under the pressure of having to what I had to do this summer,
because
I just couldn't even leave that area. I had to stay there with her.
Well, I would have driven over there, you know. We're not that far.
I know. Yeah, I should have had you just come up. I should have called and said, hey, you want to come up here? Because
I almost jumped in the car, because when you called us that first time, that you were in Johnstown. And I told these guys afterwards, you know, we could just get in the car.
Right.
I've done it for hockey games. I can certainly do it for this.
Well, another thing we could try, and I haven't done it yet, and a lot of my colleagues are doing it over, and Dick does it over the phone and some other people, but they put on headsets, and you lie down there, and you get in a quiet room there, and you put on headsets, and they feed the music through. I'm not sure if they feed the music through or you have it there on your side. I send you over a copy of the music so you can lay that under. You can have that playing in the background. And then I talk you through on a headset over a Skype line or something like that. We do it, and you can do it over, you know, I don't have to be in the room with you to do it, but as long as I can talk to you and you have a headset on and I can hear you.
Right.
So it's something we can explore.
Yeah,
I can talk about that later and
possibly
do a long-distance one there that will work out for
you. Have you done that before?
I haven't done it, but these other guys, they're all doing it. They're doing it with people in Japan and Europe and everywhere, just having them lie down on their bed, and as long as they're in a quiet room, and they have the CD with the music on, all the music's doing is helping you to relax.
Yeah.
And you just put it on lightly in the background, and then you have your headset on, and I talk you through the breathing and the... And boom, you go under, you know. You don't have to be there to do it. In fact, I've done them when I'm not in the room with the people. I've been out in the hallway, and the speaker's just been in the room. You know, so it's the same kind of thing, except
we'll talk about that, because that, you know, I know it's hard for us to get it. I certainly can't come to California. And, you know, we could try it. I'm willing to be your first test subject.
Oh, yeah, you can record it and everything.
Well, I was asking Lola.
you're asking her. Yeah, well, you play it is what...
Yeah, I get editorial.
We can edit out all everything that might be embarrassing or, you know, tag you to the Jack the Ripper.
Oh, well, yeah, she did say she's been near the water, so she'll probably be cussing like a sailor.
That could be.
She'll be a pirate in another life.
Well, I cuss like a sailor now, so I suppose it wouldn't be a far stretch. But
the stories that come out about, you know, past lives, current lives, events that happen, you don't know where the event is going to take place that causes the effect in your life. I had one woman who was having a problem with smoking. And she couldn't stop smoking. She wanted to get her smoking under control. And so I said, well, when I'm under, I can give you a suggestion. But I said, we're going to try to go back and find out why you started smoking. Well, to make a long story short, while I have her under hypnosis, I ask her to go back to the time when she started smoking. And she jumps back to 8 years old, and she's on a boat in this current life, and there's a man, she's naked, in a sleeping bag, and there's a man on top of her molesting her.
Oh, my God.
And she starts describing a molestation that happened when she was 11 years old, and just completely, becomes, agitated about this whole thing. She had repressed the whole thought. And what happened as a result of this guy doing this, when he finished with her, he said, you're a big girl now, you're a big girl now. And he put that thought into her head, and then told her not to tell anybody. She suppressed the thought of him molesting her, and then all she had was the thought of, she's a big girl now. So what'd she start doing? What big girls start doing? Started smoking, hanging out with the wrong kids, dropped out of school. All these problems. She was in the nurse's office every week of the school year. They named the school the nurse's office after her, and these events traumatized her life without her, and it was repressed. She couldn't remember. Finally, when she got older, she completely forgot about it. I mean, you forget about things that happened to you when you're 8, especially when it's something that you don't want to remember.
Yeah.
And so when it came out, and she got up to higher self, and her spirit guide showed her what caused this and why she's hanging on to it, I gave her the suggestion that now when she goes to light up a cigarette, she's not going to think she's a big girl. She's going to understand exactly why she's lighting up the cigarette. It's going to remind her of the situation that caused it, and she's going to immediately throw away the cigarette, discard the cigarette, and with it throw away part of that story and make it go away from her life forever. And, you know, when we walked out of her, she was a person who always lit up a cigarette immediately. And, she got outside, was standing there talking, no cigarette, got in her car, drove away, no cigarette. A few weeks later, I got an email from her about how much her life had changed and thanking me for, you know, what she had found out. But there again, that story in itself, that happened in this life. The real cause of why that guy molested her is coming from a past life event. That guy that did that to her, they knew each other from a past life, and something happened that caused that whole story to play out that way.
Wow.
So, to find that out, you'd have to do more and more regressions to find out how she knew this person from a previous life and why he was doing this with her.
Wow.
It was something, obviously, she may have done to him, too. You know, I mean, there's this playback thing that goes on, and it's not always the right thing to do, because you really want to balance your karma. Let that pond quit rippling, you know?
Yeah. Oh, Randy. Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
Yeah,
I just love it when you're on.
Oh, the stories. Yeah, the stories. I'll tell you. After my mom passed away, I was driving into this little town of Conemaugh that I grew up in, and as I was driving down the road, there's this 25-mile-an-hour speed limit at the town, and if you're not doing that when you go in and the cop's there, you're going to get a ticket.
Yeah.
Well, I'm cruising down the road about 45 miles an hour. I have the radio on, and I'm kind of feeling good, and I'm not thinking at all about the speed limit, and this song comes on the radio. Just as I start to turn into the town, and it starts singing, "Riding that train high on cocaine, Casey Jones, you better watch your speed." And as soon as that "Casey Jones, you better watch your speed" came on, I heard my mom's voice harmonize in on the lyrics. And as soon as I heard my mom come into the song, I'm like, "Oh my God, watch my speed!" And I hit the brake, stopped, slowed the car to 25. And as soon as I got it to 25, and I went past the bushes into the town, there was the cop hiding behind the bushes.
Wow.
And I'm going, "Thanks, Mom." You know, so it can work to your advantage. Listen to the songs on the radio. You know, there's always something coming from them. The messages around us today are really dynamic, because they're spelled out on buses and cars and signs all around you. And before, when we were Indians and walking through the forest, you had to really be able to read it from the birds and the trees and the leaves. And now it's really blasting you in the face. And once you start to see those details, you'll understand what the message is.
Well, see, the Indians, they paid attention to that. You know,
right.
If a bird landed on a certain branch.
Right.
With us, we've so insulated ourselves now, and we're so into our own heads, that there are so many times, we've talked about it on the air before, where, you know, you're driving, and all of a sudden you look up, and you've gone 50 miles. You don't remember any of that 50 miles.
Yeah.
Because you're so wrapped up in what's going on inside you. And... yeah,
and you know who
right.
was driving the car that 50 miles? That was your subconscious mind driving the car, who's very capable of driving the car, by the way. But it terrifies the conscious mind, because when you snap out of it after the 50 miles, your conscious mind is like, "Oh, my God, who was driving the car? How did I get here? What happened in his life?" But your subconscious mind, and that's the mind that I'm talking about that you reach when you go into this to find your past lives, that's who was really driving the vehicle. So... It is scary, but rest assured, there was somebody at the wheel.
Okay. Oh, man, it's 8 o'clock. We've got to scoot. But
okay.
I'm going to give you a call in a couple of days, and you
sure.
give me your email, and we'll hook
All
something
right.
up.
Well, yeah,
okay?
We'll figure it out. I'll set something up here, and I'm going to talk to Dick about how they're doing this stuff over the phone, and we'll set something up and do it.
All right. All right.
Well, it's great talking with you guys again.
Randy,
thanks,
when we get the website back up, Nick will have your book out there
all right.
And your websites. That way our listeners can get up with you.
Yeah, right. Sorry about all
and,
that.
And, hey, he's on here. Facebook. Go check him out.
Right. Check me out on Facebook. I'm there under Randy Rogers, or The Key of Life. You can find it under.
Okay.
Hey, Randy, thank you very much for talking with us today. It was awesome.
All right, yep. Jordan and Nick and Lola, it's great talking to you guys again.
Good night.
See you
Randy.
Later.
Good night.
Good night. I want to let everybody know next week.
I'm so excited.
I just
have
love
moment.
That guy.
Calm down.
That was
She's dancing.
Honestly, I just love that guy. I am so excited. And there's one name that I'm really curious comes up at any time.
Jordan.
Anna Lupo. No, I'm serious. It was... in a dream that I had about Nazis and all this other kind of stuff. Like, I dream movies. But I woke up remembering that name, and I came to work, and I asked Kelly because I thought, God, it just sounds so familiar. And her and I tend to read the same kind of books. And I yeah. thought, well, maybe it was a character in a book, you know, or something, and it didn't ring a bell with her. But every once in a while, that name just, like, pops into my head. She was a little girl, and she was like a refugee. It was the woods. And I was helping these little kids escape, and they were hungry, and she was, like, hanging back from the other kids. We were feeding them all. And I pulled her forward, and I asked her her name, and just then all these Nazis came and were surrounding us. And then I grabbed her, and we were trying to hide, and that's when I woke up.
Wow. Wow.
And it just has really I mean, dreams come and go. I mean, you know. But, boy, that one.
Yeah,
that
stuck
name
with
really has stuck with me. It's just bizarre. So I'm thinking.
Maybe you were the little girl.
Or I don't know. I don't know. I'm just, it fascinates me. This whole past life thing just fascinates the hell out of me. Because like you said before, traits that you have mm-hmm. that are almost opposite of everything that your life has been, your family represents, the other people in your family, but they had to have come from somewhere. And you know, it's like this fishing thing with me all of a sudden. I was like, God, I'm watching all these fishing shows. Mm. And I've always loved to fish, which is, I grew up doing it, but not, I actually have done it for a living. And, I mean, it's like completely opposite of anything anybody would ever expect from me.
Yeah.
Would you think I was a fisher person?
I was about to ask you.
Especially not when you refer to it as a fisher person.
Are you planning on heading to Alaska?
No deadliest catch for me. No.
See Lola out there with a coat on, trying to toss the hook.
She'd freeze to death.
She's so tiny. It's bad enough when I watch Life on the Line, and they're just out in the North Atlantic. You know, it's like, oh, not the squirrel. But it just, you know, things like that, that's just weird to me that my life would take these weird turns that weren't in anybody's radar, you know? I know I'm mixing my metaphors. But, you know, so I can't wait.
You're too excited. You can't keep the metaphor straight.
Oh,
we're going to make like a tree and get out of here. No.
Yeah, I still got work to do.
Next week is our big call-in show. Everybody out there, call in. Give us your stories. It's going to be a great time. It's 2 hours of call-in, so...
Yeah, please call in. Well, those were interesting stories that Foggy Bottom, when he was on on the broadcast this morning.
Did he talk about it too?
Yeah, and it was like, oh boy, this gives a whole new light. But you're not going to bother me.
Yeah.
Nobody ever bothers me. I could take a walk. They walk through people. They pull people's hair. They scratch people. And then they go, that's her. We're not going to mess with her.
Get out of here. Lola's coming.
Not? Oh, yeah, she ruins everything.
She wants it too bad.
Well, it was weird because in the second house, very first person that we seen, one of the characters, they knew my name. So the whole way through, everybody kept picking on me. And I was like, okay, this is weird. Stop saying my name.
There's like, why is
everybody always like, picking on me?
Well, see, my sister, God bless her, but she is the biggest chicken you've ever seen in your life. And when we did the pin tour that time, she literally was curled up in a ball, crying, going, oh, I told you what she said. I can't say it on the air. But and then the chainsaws, you know, she was scared silly. She was actually scared silly. And, of course, we got lost in the maze. We had to get rescued. The guy goes, you're the first group that's ever done that. Like, we couldn't find our way out.
This is why the ghost leave you alone.
No.
It's pity.
So I was asking because they got like a maze thing at Foggy Bottom too at the very beginning, and I got turned around. I was like, after they like come out and jump and scare you, I was like,
what's the claustrophobic thing like? Because
it's fine.
Like right now, thinking about those miners having to come up in that tube, can't breathe. I can't. And so I told him, is there another way around? Because I don't know that I could go through it.
It's not bad. It's like, it's air. It's like, how would you explain
stuffy?
It's like one of them, like, things that you, like,
like a bounce house type of thing. It's like material with air in
it.
So it's not
like
it pushes up against you, but it's not. I mean, you can just push it.
Oh, okay. So I know I can get.
It's kind of like a tunnel.
Okay.
We went through that section with a bunch of teenagers.
And he fell.
And he like, as soon as he stepped in, because it's all black, as soon as he stepped in, he just dropped. And I was like, to the lady at the door, I was like, can you get a light or something? Because I think that kid's hurt. And she's like, enter. And I'm like, no, seriously, I think that kid's hurt.
He's got bone poking through skin. I think there's something wrong with him.
It's smelling of almonds.
He's like, somebody help. It was funny.
Oh, my. Okay, well.
That's
guys.
All we got. Call in next week with your shows. Until next time.
Stories, not shows.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid. Only believe. Right.